teachers. That's definitely been a challenge.
Yeah, it's hard when you're not in school to try to figure out what's the right structure to put in place. I was just talking to a client this morning, and she was saying that her challenge is Saturdays because there's no structure. It's not like they have to be somewhere at 7:30 like they do the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then break tends to handle that too. So what tools did you use the most? What was most helpful for you?
Surviving
the spring break with grace.
I think trying to keep my mouth shut and to not hover were very helpful. And I'm finding that applies also with school, is because my daughter, I think she's at that crossroads being 15 where she feels like she should have more autonomy, and even if she's not pulling it off perfectly, she'd much rather be in control than have me providing too many prompts.
Yeah. Well, so keeping your mouth shut, not hovering. So how did you do? Was it easy? Was it hard?
I think with practice, it's getting easier. And just being observant, letting myself overreact or have a meltdown. If I can keep composed, that really helps her levels of anxiety not get pushed up by how I'm reacting to a situation.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, congratulations for doing that. It's not an easy thing to do. Did you feel rested after spring break, or were you totally stressed out when it was done?
We were both exhausted, but I think we both had a good time, and we crammed a lot of activity into a short period. And enjoyed ourselves, and I think it was just a good break from the school routine.
Awesome. Okay, so where do you want to take aim from here?
From here, I think just to continue watching my reactions and your mantra to respond rather than react in situations, and to listen to my daughter more, because I'm seeing, you know, when she does make observations or comments, they're often very astute, and I just need to realize my way is not always going to be the best.
Interesting. So what gets in the way of listening in those moments?
I think moments of being panicked or being overtired, you know, those are when.
Of course, we're all more sensitive. Yeah, we're all more sensitive. We're exhausted. Our buttons, I think that our buttons get bigger when we get tired or we're hungry or things get a little stressful. And so so it's interesting. I love the idea of just making listening to her more of the goal. Can you think of a particular situation where let's take aim on a particular challenge. Is there a particular situation that you see that this is more difficult than other times?
Where it's more difficult to listen to her, or?
Well, just the whole idea of it's about staying calm and not panicking and really kind of staying more in that problem-solving collaborative mode. Is it around school? Is it around home, you know, homework? Is it around house, you know, house? What are some of the areas?
It's pretty much school. Is getting up and getting to school is just continues to be a challenge and.
To help me understand how the listening to her ties into that.
Well, she has asked me to just not prompt her. And she's fine with arriving at school late if that's what happens. She would rather have those consequences than have a morning of me prompting her every 5 minutes to move forward with whatever she's doing. And I watched a video recently that helped me understand how she's not able to track time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she simply cannot track it. And so I'm going to try to discuss this with her in a calm moment of what structure would you think was helpful to
right.
bring into this. Do we need like an alarm going off every 5 minutes? Would you prefer that rather than me opening your bedroom door and saying 5 minutes have gone past? Or what is she going to see as something that's a tool rather than an annoyance?
Right. So we're going to go back and take aim. So we're taking aim. You're taking aim on getting up and out in the morning, and you're mm-hmm. paying attention. You're paying attention to the fact that you'd like to be able to listen more than direct. You mm-hmm. understand. You understand that she has a clear executive function issue, and you want to engage her somehow in a solution around this area. Is that right?
Perfect.
Okay. Cool. All right, well, let's jump in, because I think that this is a great, even though it's just you on the call, I think this is a great conversation to have in the context of this week's tip. So,
this is Ellen. I'm a little late.
Hey, Ellen, I'm glad you joined us. Let's see here. Hang on a second. It's not refreshed. There you are. Awesome. So, late, Ellen, you want to check in too?
Sure. So what am I checking in? I'm checking in how things are going.
Yep.
I'm taking things day by day. I'm trying to like, so he often had a very rough couple months and started the new term 2 weeks ago. From a school standpoint, we've actually started to look for another school, third school in 3 years. So I think I feel like I've kind of lost, I used to feel like I kind of had a gut reaction, like what were the right decisions, and I'm not feeling so confident about my gut reactions right now, but
yeah.
I keep telling him I'm trying to take it day by day. He passed all his courses, and he had an extended absence last trimester and had a bunch of incompletes, but he got everything done. And so I told him that I was proud that, you know, he passed everything. It wasn't the strongest trimester, but he get through, and, you know, he had an A, three Bs, and three Ds. So I tried to be very encouraging about the fact that he passed everything, and it's a new trimester, and it's a new start, and there's only 6 weeks left of this school. At that point, you know, then we could evaluate whether it's the right, you know, we've applied to one other school. We may look at our public school. I said there's a lot of decisions, but we can make those in June after we get through this year. And mm-hmm. that I just encouraged him to, I said, you know, I know last semester was rough and difficult, and I know you're capable of doing better than the D's, but I understand with everything that was happening, and, you know, the goal would be to try to pull those up a little and just get your homework done. And I tried to keep it all very positive, not about mistakes. And, of course, then I went in my room and cried for 5 minutes afterwards.
Yeah, it's
by myself. By myself, but I didn't want him to see that I was discouraged or disheartened in any way, and that I just wanted him to kind of say, realize that I wasn't upset or mad, that it just was it was, and let's, like, move on a new day.
So what was at the core of the tears, Ellen?
You know, I think because I'm a person that always did care about my grades and I was motivated, and it's hard for me to see that he's a kid that internally he cares, but when he goes through these bouts, I mean, he got the D's because at the end of the day, when he had the opportunity to do better on those exams, he just didn't dig in. And I got it. It was just too emotionally draining. And he was like, whatever it is. For me, it's frustrating because I see he has the ability and he has the capability, but he just doesn't have the desire. And it's part of the executive functioning, but it's just a different desire than I have to that those things matter to me, and I wish they mattered to him, but I know they don't. And it's frustrating as a parent to feel like maybe you failed somehow, that it doesn't matter to them. And I know it's not because of me, but it's hard.
Yeah. Well, and so I can hear the shift in your attitude. Can I offer you an additional slight shift, Ellen?
Yes.
And I think this is the thing. It's like I'm wondering whether it's more that he doesn't or that he really can't. That all the pieces aren't in place. And so the language you're using makes it sound a little bit like, well, if he would just do X, then he could be like me.
No, I know there's something that's keeping him from doing that. It's just hard when I see, I heard the end of, like, the room conversation with the door, and I'm doing the same thing. Like, I'm checking on him every, 10 minutes or every 20 minutes. So how's the homework coming? And it is his decision to do or not to do.
Well, so here's the thing. So this is where the scaffolding comes in. So it's their decision to do or not to do. And there are times that they have a difficult time doing themselves, and it's about putting structures and systems and scaffolding in place to help them. And so
he's so resistant to that scaffolding.
What's that?
He is so resistant to any scaffolding being in place.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's with this age group, that's the balance is,
yeah,
how do you say, here's the expectation that you're setting for yourself. And this is the thing, is like, I like to try to get our teens to set the expectation for yourself. So what do you want to accomplish? What's reasonable and what's really your goal here? And let me help you achieve your goal, as opposed to a parent-imposed goal. And then once they say, okay, I'd like to have all A's and B's, or I'd like to have all the A's, B's, and C's. Okay, well, so what are some things that you know you need to do differently that are going to help you to get there, and how can I help you to accomplish those things? So if it's, I need to study at least 30 minutes a night, or it's the, I need a better system for tracking my assignments, or whatever it is, it becomes, what do you need and how can I help you, as opposed to here's the things that you need to do.
I do say that to him.
Yeah. So that's great. That's great.
But,
so what gets in the way,
Ellen? He'll tell me what his goal is. He'll say, well, you know, I'd like to get all straight A's. And I say, well, let's pick a realistic goal. You know, something, of course, everyone, but what's realistic based on where you are? And, I mean, that's why I said yesterday, I said, you know, I think it's up to you. What would you, he said, yeah, I think I can get nothing lower than a C. And I said, and I'll say, what can I do to help you? And he's like, nothing, it's up to me.
Okay, so great. So let's get back to, there's, I don't know if you guys have read an article, I talked about this a few months back, but so great, you got it. Let's check back in. And then you set a date, you know, whether it's in a few hours if they're working on an assignment, or if it's a few days when they're trying to, you know, work on a variety of assignments. And if you're still having a hard time, I'm gonna offer a little bit more help. And, you know, and I think that that's the piece of it, is that you have, it's about setting them up so that they expect that that you've got their back. So they're not, if they're not successful with what they think they can do, that you've gently planted a seed that you're going to step a little closer. And then the dance becomes how to not completely take over, but to say, okay, you're still, and I went through this week, it's like, okay, you're still missing four assignments. What's your plan? And instead of, okay, you've just got it, by the end of it, you know, when you come home from school today, I want you to tell me about all the conversations. And if the conversations haven't happened, then, you know, then this is the consequence of the not having the conversation. So it becomes then about motivation to do the process. Does that make sense as I'm saying that, Ellen?
It does. I think the thing that I struggle a little bit with is that I'll say, you know, have you done all your homework that's due tomorrow? And I've had this for months. Everything he does now is online. Everything. And so he'll say yes, and then I'll get a report the next day. And if he doesn't, in his school, if he doesn't do it, he gets a zero. There's no going back. There's no, I missed it, I'm going to make it up and do it and get it into the teacher now. It's done.
Okay. So if you were going to put a little bit more scaffolding up, so you know that the next morning it's too late, and
yeah,
you were going to say, and you've observed, hey, buddy, I've observed that you've thought that you've had everything done, and you've let me know that it was done, and we get up the next morning and it's really not. So what's an extra step to double check that you could put in place, and how can I help you to be accountable for that step? What would that look like for you, Ellen?
It would mean my going, I mean, the only way I think I could, because it's not that he's, you know, he's 16. He's telling me because he thinks it's what I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
If he hasn't
done
something, he knows he hasn't done it. He's telling me he's done it because he doesn't want me to get upset or angry with him, or be like, why haven't you done it? So the only way I could check it is if he says it, is to go and check online to see if he's uploaded it, or, you know, to actually go online into his page to see if he submitted it, or if it's a hard copy to see that it's completed.
Well, and I think that's the piece of it. You know, is the scaffolding, you look yourself, is the scaffolding that he does a print screen and shows you the print screen, is the scaffolding that you reserve the right to do a spot check, and if you find that it's not true, then, you know, then there's a, you know, a consequence. Is there a reward for, you know, an extra bonus reward or some kind of motivation? But it's about balancing this whole, they're going to tell us what they think they want us to hear, with finding ways to keep them accountable and trusting that if he's having a hard time getting it done, it's because he's having a hard time getting it done. Which I think that your perspective is great. It's just the, okay, now what do I do? Because I know that
right.
I know that he's not doing it himself, but I don't want to jump in and swoop in because that's what I used to do. So.
Well, I never did. I never was a swooper.
You never were.
I've always let him. Yeah, I've always let him kind of do it himself. Maybe that was part of my issue, is I let him do it too much and he didn't learn how to ask for help. But.
Well, and so let's jump into the conversation today and then figure out where it takes us. Where do you want to take aim, Ellen?
I want to take aim on working with him to understand the benefits of having somebody with you help you or to give you suggestions. He's very resistant. So I do see the benefits of scaffolding or me doing it, and I think he doesn't. I don't know okay. if it's not that he doesn't see the benefits, but he's just, you know, he's a teenager, and he just wants to do it all by himself, even if it's not successful at it.
Yeah. No, and it makes sense that he does. And is it specifically, if we're going to pick one challenge area, is it more about homework and getting assignments turned in? Is it more about, where do you want to start?
All right, let's do the homework because it's something I can pinpoint.
Okay. All right. So, and Liz, I'm just going to loop back to you. Are you feeling like you still have a clear picture of where you're taking aim?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay, cool. All right, so the conversation today is about having compassion and not taking things personally. And we combine these two because they're really both parts of parenting positively. And so we wanted to loop back around and talk specifically about these two areas because they're so important, such an important part of parenting positively. And, you know, there's a phrase that we use, and actually I have a post-it note on my desk to remember this for myself, and it says, assume best intention. And, you know, when we look at our kids, and we see how they're behaving, and Ellen, yours is a great example because we're just talking about the fact that he's 16. It makes perfect sense that he doesn't want to have help. He thinks he should be able to do it on his own. He wants to be able to do it on his own. All his friends can do stuff on his own. He's preparing to be apart from you. And so it makes perfect sense that his reaction is, no, 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 I don't need you to help me. And so if we can start with, yeah, it makes perfect sense, and have some compassion, and really kind of put ourselves in their shoes, it can really be helpful. Number one, from a perspective, kind of a how you look at it perspective, right? So it's like, what he's doing right now makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense that my 15-year-old would have a difficult time saying goodnight to his female friend on Facebook because he's so enamored and he doesn't want to ever leave her sight. You know, that's just kind of where he's at emotionally right now. And so yeah. I can have compassion for that, and I understand that completely. And if I can see it from his perspective, then the second thing is to have empathy for it. And so a lot of times what we do is we move to the problem solving right away. So, you know, it's like, yeah, I get it, and you got to get to bed right now. That's what happens in our house. Yeah, I get it, and you still got to do your homework. But if we take the step to validate and say, wow, buddy, I know that it's really hard for you. You really want to, you would stay up all night and talk to her if you could. I get it. And I also, you know, and I get it. And just stop there for a second and not do the but. And I think that that's what we tend to do. So compassion is about understanding where they come from, validating that you get what's going on for them, and taking a pause long enough so that you don't devaluate what they just said, what they're going through. Yeah, I know it's really hard to focus when it's so beautiful outside and you want to be outside playing basketball. I get it. It kind of stinks. And then let them let them elaborate. Let them, you know, vent a little bit. Let them, you know, get out some of the additional perspective before you move on to the problem solving. Because what happens is we jump to problem solving, but we say, yeah, I get it, and then what comes next sounds like a but, and so it makes it feel like they don't get that we don't get them. And then, you know, and then move to problem solving with them at the center, with an understanding of their perspective and what's going on for them at the center. And then the other flip side of this is as we're going through this is that we can't take it personally. And this is so hard when we're dealing with teenagers like we are in this group, is that they constantly say stuff that just feels like crap to hear. And they do, you know, it's like sometimes they do it on purpose, sometimes they don't do it on purpose. The reality is that you don't know whether they are or not, but sometimes they just say stuff and it's like, wow, do you have any idea? And a lot of us, because we're overwhelmed and we're tired, you know, our triggers are bigger than normal, our emotions run high, and so it's easy to feel disrespected, it's easy to feel injured, and I'm not trying to discount it because it hurts, it really does, and it's not about us. It really is about our kids struggling, it's about our kids having a hard time, it's about our kids it's about our kids being impulsive and not thinking about what they say before they say it, because it's not an easy thing to do when you're ADD, is to stop and go, oh, wait, yeah, I'm really angry right now, but I got to remember not to hurt my mom's feelings. I mean, anybody who's really angry is going to have a hard time remembering that, and if you're an ADDer, it makes it even more difficult. And so it's not taking it impersonally is a really key component to helping us to stay in this place where we can help our kids solve their challenges and really see it from their perspective. Because the reality is, I mean, you were just describing, Ellen, a great example is that you were always a person that was highly motivated by school and grades motivated you. And the reality is that your son may be the same way, but he's been in such a difficult situation and his executive function challenges are at a level where that part of him has gotten buried because he doesn't feel like he has any shot at it. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to pretend to be inside your son's head, but I know that I'll look at my son and that's exactly what's happened for him, is that part of him that thinks that he can get all A's and B's at the beginning of the semester is now going, well, geez, if I can just, you know, pass my classes, I'll feel good about my, you know, I'll feel good, and it suddenly becomes okay to just pass my classes because it feels really crappy to know that I'm not getting A's and B's. You know, right. So I think that this is the place is kind of really putting ourselves as much as we can in their shoes and finding a way to not take it personally. So I'm curious what you guys think about this topic. I bet it rings true for both of you.
It totally rings true to me, and I try really hard not to take it personally, but there's those moments of doubt when you say, you know, did I do something wrong or have I done something wrong? And I know it's got, you know, deep in my core, I know it's not me, but it still happens. I know last night that's why I cried, because I was like, am I doing something wrong? Like, you're like, have I done something wrong? Have I stayed in the marriage I shouldn't, is affected, you know, like all cut, you start to question everything you've done could have had this effect on this child.
Yeah, so I'm gonna stretch your brain for a minute, Ellen. You willing to play with me?
Sure.
So there's a precept that we talk about in my coaching program that is that there is no right or wrong. All experiences are opportunities for growth.
Yeah. downwards growth in some situations. But yes.
Well,
I'm in the premise that you learn something from everything, even if it's a negative, you've learned something, you know, not to do again or maybe, but yes, I understand the premise.
Right, and I think that the other thing that I would stress is that, you know, I've really, it's been really interesting to kind of challenge as your kids develop, you know, we have paradigms that say, oh my gosh, if you get a C in sixth grade social studies, your life will be over. You know, it's like, I mean, I will firmly tell you that I, at one point in my life, I had that perspective that all the doors were shutting because of a C in sixth grade social studies, right? And it's been really, we definitely have gone further beyond that in terms of the official grading scale in our family. But it's just been amazing to me to kind of challenge myself and go, okay, I really thought that that was true, and it's not. And I know for a fact right now that it's not. And yet, I would have paid $1,000 to get that C back because it was just so critical, and I was so convinced that that was what was going to end the world for my daughter, right?
Right.
And so I think that the challenge here is to say, what if nothing was done wrong? What if everything is exactly the way that it's supposed to be? What door could have been opened by this situation? And so that's my kind of stretching your imagination here a little bit. And you may not be able to go there completely, but it might be a good exercise to kind of look at our viewpoints of right and wrong. So what do you think, Liz?
That really resonates with me because I'm really trying to embrace that direction of this is where we're supposed to be, and coming to terms with how my daughter's executive functioning impacts her performance, and realizing that the grade she's getting doesn't reflect how hard it is for her to physically be in that class and tune out distractions and be able to perform even though she's feeling anxious or depressed or distracted, and just to accept that in high school her grades are going to be different from where they were in grade school and middle school because she's just overwhelmed at this point and working on her coping skills. So I feel like every day she's in class is a win, and we'll just keep building on that.
Yeah, well, and your level of compassion is so so strong. I can really hear that you get it for her. What, when you think about the additional steps that I took to show the compassion and validate for them, how do you feel that shows up for you?
How do I feel that it does what?
How well are you able to do that?
I think it's definitely a learning curve to adjust my expectations to where she is, and to factor in the anxiety and the depression, because for example, in going through her 504 meetings, we were basically told she needs to get over it now, immediately, and she needs to function at 100%, and that's just not doable. And so I'm trying to have a perspective that is supportive and reasonable, where she's
where I'm not amping up her stress unnecessarily. We're trying to find that right point of supporting and a little pushing, but not overwhelming.
Yeah. So what do you notice gets in the way?
I think, you know, moments when you get triggered, definitely when you start taking it personally. Mm-hmm. When she pushes back or you know, when she's just being a kid. And we had that conversation last week of her saying, you know, I have good intentions and I'm not doing this to be a bad kid.
Yeah. So when you think about those moments when you do start to take it personally, what's mm-hmm. What's the voice in your head say?
I think when it shifts too much into being my problem rather than just taking a step back, getting some perspective, and trying to engage her in finding a solution.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that suddenly it's like when we end up in crisis, you know, there's a problem and it gets, you know, to the point where it's like, oh my gosh, I've got to help solve this problem. I've mm-hmm. got to do something about this. I've got to, you know, and it's kind of like, even if there's two levels, one is this is my problem, and the second is, oh my gosh, this is my child and they have a problem, I've got to help them. So that both of them are really more catabolic, kind of over-personalized perspectives, and they really often get in the way of problem solving because we sound a little bit more in search and destroy mode than we are in problem solving mode.
Mm-hmm.
So
it sounds like I have a son, and it sounds like we're going through a lot of the same stuff with our teenagers. I don't know about you, but I've totally questioned about whether high school is school in itself is just so triggering and so anxiety provoking, whether school is the right place for him to be.
Interesting.
And I don't know, I have a master's, you know, I'm totally one of these people who believes in education, but I see the effect on him from a depression standpoint, and I don't want him to, you know, it's that balance of like, how do I encourage him to be the best and be a happy person, where every day when I pick him up from school, he's just a ball of knots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the question is kind of, you know, is the
but what is the answer if he's not in
what
school?
Is
what is if he's not in school.
Well, I guess the question is, so how can you have both? And so let's go to that first, which is, you know, what is it about the school that's stress producing? Is it the school environment? How much of it is what parents contribute to it? And then how much of it is in our control? How much of it is out of our control? And so if you were gonna do two things differently, Ellen, to take some pressure off of him when you see him so stressed out about school, what would you do differently?
I try to say to myself, it in the long run, it really doesn't matter as long as he gets through it. You know, getting through it is mean somehow graduating from high school, whether it's with a GED, that I know I've stepped back, but then when he starts to feel a little better, I find myself putting the pressure on. Like, okay, so the D's aren't great. How about this? Like, trying to say, okay, I knew you could do C's, and then I think then he'll say, like, as soon as I start to feel it better, like, you all expect me to ramp up and go to the next level where, you know?
Well, and that's the thing is that, yeah, so I guess the question is, if it's about, if you're going to reward process rather than outcome, right? And so it's, you know, it's about how hard he's trying, rather than and creating an environment where he is willing to engage and continue to try, rather than what actually happens when he does it. How would that change it for you?
I mean, I've always felt that it was more important to watch him try than what the actual grades were. I think as a parent, when you see a kid and whether it's the executive functioning, it's the depression, he's not trying from what you say trying.
Right.
And so that's where I have difficulty, because I am trying to just support the effort, but there's a lot of times, because of what he's going through, there is no effort.
Well, and so that's the question. What do you measure in those instances?
Right. I don't know.
So when all these left brain people, Liz, can you play with us for a minute? Because I know you may not be as analytical as Ellen and I, but it's like, what do you measure in those moments to say, how do I know, how do I feel, so it's not about how do I know, it's about how do I feel comfortable in this moment where it's not a straight line from A to Z?
Were you asking me, Diane?
No, actually, I was asking Ellen.
Oh,
but I was asking you to play. I was asking you to play along with us for a minute. If you want to chip in, please do. But I just.
I mean, I feel like I'm willing to zigzag to whatever he needs. Mm-hmm. Like, I no longer feel like there's a straight way he needs to go. I think in our society, it's difficult because I want to encourage him that there are things that you in life that you're not going to want to do, that you don't like to do, but you still got to do. But I also don't want to put so much pressure that he then says, well, if that's the way life is, it's not worth living. Because I don't, that's the balance when you have a kid with severe depression.
Right.
So I try to, like, if he finds something, if he's in there playing music, I'll go in and say, that sounds awesome. Like, you know, is your band getting, like, trying to encourage him to do things he does enjoy, which, you know, and I always say to him, I don't care what path you lead. You know, what I want you to feel is to be a happier person, and I'll support whatever that means for you. He's still struggling to figure that out. What makes him a happier person?
So what do you think about the voice in your head?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the big fear? What's that voice say?
My big fear is that if he doesn't find some happiness and he doesn't, the struggle is too much, he will end his life.
Mm-hmm.
That is my big fear.
Yeah. So how does saying that out loud help you to focus on what's really important?
Trying to celebrate the little successes, like celebrating that he didn't fail anything last trimester, that nothing was a fail, he's going to pass this year at school. Because internally I know even if he failed every subject this last trimester, he'd get through 10th grade. He wouldn't fail the year. Again, but see, that relates it back to school, and I feel like maybe school shouldn't matter that much.
Well, and I think that's the piece of it. And so my challenge to you as you kind of go into this week, Ellen, and since we start doing the wrap-up here, is to really get clear on what you want for him and solve to that instead of what, because what we do is we kind of, we get to this sort of, okay, grades are important, this is important, trying hard is important, and we skip over the why we want it. Because what we really want is for our kids to feel a certain way. We want our kids to feel successful. We want our kids to feel like they fit in. We want our kids to feel good about themselves, whatever it is, whatever your language is for that. But get really clear on what your priorities are and then start solving to that instead of the should.
Right.
And it's not easy because, you know, we've got different values. Because we, you know, a lot of us that are in this boat have values around excellence and values around performance and values around, you know, and so it's about finding ways to honor those values and still stay sane and still support our kids the way we want to. Okay. Liz, do you want to throw anything else in before we do our wrap-up?
I think I had one way of looking at my daughter's performance is that she has a limited amount of executive functioning each day, and sometimes anything that taps into that, whether it's anxiety or depression or some friendship drama or if she has to perform in a choir concert at night or, you know, or she misses sleep or is not eating well, all of those things take up that amount of function she has for the day, and to realize that pressuring her when her fuel gauge is on empty is not productive. And to try to mentally track what's going on, things that might be adding up in each day, and just to be sensitive to that, and realize when I need to just listen to her and give her opportunities to give me feedback of what's going on or what the pressure is that day, and but also to be reasonable about it so that it doesn't become a constant as far as I can't do this because of a friendship drama or something, that let's look at coping skills to build on for the long term so that you're not getting distracted or run down, or let's just work on ways to build that structure and support so that.
Go ahead.
Pardon?
No, I'm sorry. I wanted to let you finish your thought.
Oh, no, that's fine. I'm done.
So what kind of stands out for me, Liz, as you're describing, is that, you know, it takes emotional and practical energy to use executive function. And so mm-hmm. Our kids kind of get drained throughout the day as they're trying to hold it all together in class or remember things or, you know,
Right. Interact
socially appropriately. And so that, you know, if our job becomes, okay, how can I help fill their fountain back up again so that they have more energy. So it's about the energy that they need to use the executive function they have rather in addition to the structures that they need to support the executive function. I think that the combination of the two is a great way to look at it, Liz. Thank you for that. Okay, so let's do our wrap-up here. We're on page 54, I think. We're going to, the four questions are, you know, what did you focus on? What did you pay most attention to today? What became clear or what takeaway do you want to have from our conversation? What's a realistic action step for you to take? And what do you need to do to set yourself up for success? So before we close off, I just would love to hear from both of you what you want to do with the, what kind of, what stood out for you most and what you, what action you want to commit to.
So what stood out for me is really, really working on the compassion that I really need. I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm compassionate, but then sometimes my actions are not what I would say if I'm thinking about it. So I need to translate how I think I'm being compassionate to my actions and what I'm saying to him more often. And so my action is really, really to try to get him to ask him how he wants to deal with something, and you know, just to remind him that I'm there to support him, and ask him how I can support him. So it's his saying how I can support him versus my saying how I can support him.
I love that, because what you're doing is that you're making it, you're keeping it his issue, and you're helping him, but you're holding him accountable for asking for that help. How does that feel different?
I mean, I'll usually ask him, but it's kind of like I let him get away with like a one-word response, and I don't ask him to elaborate. So I really want him to understand these are his decisions, and I'm just there, because I still feel like he feels like I'm pushing, my values, which I probably am.
Yeah. Well, so what do you want to do to try to keep that in your memory as you're talking to him?
If my ultimate goal is for him to be a happier person, this is what I have to do. I have to put aside how I see things and really focus on how he sees things. He sees things.
Okay, cool. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway?
I am going to focus on engaging my daughter in creating solutions. And my takeaway is to adopt the mantra of assuming best intentions, and my action step is to work on validating how she's feeling at various moments, to not be dismissive about that. And setting myself up for success, both my daughter and I think letting her know it's okay to ask for help, that when she needs it, to not feel like that's admitting
a struggle or admitting that there's any chink in her armor, that it's okay to give me a cue when she needs some assistance, that she doesn't have to, even though she feels like she's an adult and wants to be treated like an adult, that, you know, there are still areas where she does need help.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. Great call today, ladies. Glad to connect with you. We are on again. So next week is the Lifeline calls. If you'd like to join us for that, there's a call actually at noon on Tuesday again, and Thursday evening as well. And then we're on for our PSS group again on the 28th of April. Can't believe it's almost the end of April. It's crazy. So thank you, ladies. Have a great couple weeks, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Bye.